From Hollywood, it's the new Edgar Bergen Hour with Charlie McCarthy.
Stop, if you're Bergen, help me, I'll mow you down.
It's Sunday night, and time again transcribed for Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy with Mortimer Sturge, Effie Clinker, Carol Richards, Ray Noble, Gary Crosby, Jack Kirkwood, Frank Nelson, the Mellow Man, yours truly, John Heaston, and our special guest, seashell expert, conchologist Dr. Ernest Tractor. And here they are now, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Me. You know, folks, me. What is this?
Me.
Bergen, what is going on here? What's the matter?
Charlie, I've got a little surprise for you.
Yeah?
Yes.
You mean you're switching tonight? You're going to sit on my knee?
No. No, I just wanted to tell you that I've been taking vocal lessons.
Oh, no.
Yes. I intend to sing on next week's show.
You're going to sing?
Yes.
Oh, steady stomach, steady.
Yeah. La 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 la. Not bad, huh?
Sounds a little like Nelson Eddy.
Yeah.
With a mouthful of hot shortening bread.
My teacher.
Sure, your teacher, sure.
My teacher says that I'm just about ready to sing professionally.
Yeah, she does, huh?
Yes. There's just one thing I lack, and that's the proper gestures when I sing. I don't know exactly, you know, what to do with my hands.
I see. Well, how about holding them over your mouth?
No.
I just love to clobber him.
Well, I say, how'd you do, chap?
Well, wasn't that enough? Oh, Ray.
Yes. You're just the man I want to see.
Oh, really?
Yes, I want you to be the first to know that I'm going to sing on the show next week, and I was just wondering who should accompany me.
Oh. Well, might I suggest a bodyguard?
Nice going, Ray. Nice going.
Yeah, I don't understand, Ray, that coming from you. I thought you'd be tickled to death to accompany me at the piano.
Yes, but Edgar, old boy, after all, I had to live with myself.
And that takes guts.
I'm waiting for your answer, Ray.
Yeah, I know, Edgar, but...
Watch it, Ray. Next week you may be playing piano in the unemployment office of Philharmonic.
Unemployment office? I say, Charles, you don't really think that Edgar would...
No. Just look who he's got warming up in the wings back there. Any questions, Ray?
Yes. Now, Ray, you know I would hate to, you know, fire you, but I must have your answer, Ray.
I don't know just what to say, Mr. Godfrey.
What's that?
You don't have to decide now. You can go home and think it over for a week, Ray.
Well, I don't have to. I just made up my mind.
Ah, yes, good old Ray. Yes. What is it, Ray?
Well, I've been thinking, Edgar. Why shouldn't you sing, Edgar?
Exactly.
After all, I tell jokes on this show, you know.
This way you can both get even with each other.
I'm sure it'll work out fine, Ray. You know, the Mellow Men have agreed to sing the background accompaniment for me, too.
Oh, what has he got on them?
No, I haven't. I think he's just coming over tonight, and he'll be thrilled at this news.
He will, huh?
Yes. You know, if I make good on next week's show, he wants me to make some records.
Well, that's a good idea. You can call the album Music to Slash Your Wrist By.
No. I don't think that would be good.
Somebody, I say, somebody's at the door.
It must be my singing teacher now. Come in. Oh, hello, Professor Nelson.
Well, greeting and orchestration.
So you're Bergen's singing teacher, are you?
But of course. I'm one of the best music teachers in the country, if I do say so myself.
than I usually do.
Modest sort of a creep, isn't he?
Quiet, not whole, or I'll rub your legs together and start a fire.
See here, tall, dark, and obnoxious. Now, gentlemen, please, please, now.
Say, Professor, old chap, would you say that Edgar really has talent?
Oh, he's loaded.
Uh-huh.
And when he sings, I wish I were.
You know, suddenly I'm beginning to like him.
Yes, but just how would you describe his voice?
Well, I would say it sounds like the mating call of a pair of corduroy trousers.
I'm liking him more every minute.
Now, just a second, Professor. Can you make any constructive criticism?
Well, to begin with, your head tones lack warmth.
Yes.
Well, no wonder. Just skin doesn't keep that cold out, you know.
Your turn, Professor.
How can you say that after all the money I've paid you? Don't you have anything complimentary to say?
Well, I can truthfully say that you're progressive.
Well, thank you. What should I do next?
Have your feet examined.
My feet examined? What's that got to do with my singing?
Nothing, but my brother is a starving chiropodist.
Well, Bergen, I hope you'll change your mind about singing on the show next week.
No, Charlie, I'm as determined as ever.
Yeah?
Yes, next week, Bergen sings.
Oh, no.
Now here's vivacious Carol Richards with a lively number called Hot Diggity.
Hot diggity, dog diggity, boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity, dog diggity, boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight. Never dreamed anybody could kiss that away. Bring me bliss that away. With a kiss that away. What a wonderful feeling to feel that away. Tell me, where have you been all my life? Oh, I'm diggity, dog, diggity, boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? I'm diggity, dog, diggity, boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight. Never knew that my heart could go zing that away. Ding-a-ling that away. Make me sing that away. Said goodbye to my troubles. They went that away. Ever since you came into my life. Oh, diggity-dong-diggity-boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? I'm diggity-dong-diggity-boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight. There's a cute little cottage for two that away. Skies are blue that away. Dreams come true that away. If you say I can share it with you that away, I'll be happy the rest of my life. Oh, diggity-dong-diggity-boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Oh, diggity-dong-diggity-boom, what you do to me? How my future will shine. Oh, diggity-dong-diggity-boom, what you do to me? From the moment you're mine.
Now it's time for the literary portion of our program, our Poet's Corner. We are greatly honored in having with us, as our guest tonight, one of the shining lights of the literary world. Here he is, the Poet Laureate of the Vigoro Counter, Professor William Wadsworth Kirkwood.
My professor, you look sad tonight, Professor.
And with good reason, boy.
Oh?
Didn't you hear the news? This morning, my wife ran away with my next-door neighbor.
No. How could that happen to you?
Oh, I don't know. Just lucky, I guess.
Well, under the circumstances, I don't blame you for feeling miserable.
Yeah, he brought her back this afternoon.
Oh.
Yeah, he got one look at her when the smog lifted and turned chicken.
That's unbelievable.
That's what everybody says when they see her. What a beast.
Professor, it's hard to believe all those terrible stories about your wife. Where did you actually meet her?
Oh, I met my wife at a dancing school.
Arthur Murray?
Well, at first I thought she was.
Yeah. Well, how could you make a mistake like that? Well, that's ridiculous.
Yes, I know. He's got a smaller mustache. Anyway, the next day she invited me over to see her stamp album.
Her stamp album?
Yeah, there we were. First she'd lick a stamp, then I'd lick a stamp. Then finally she tried to kiss me. But that was a mistake.
Why?
We had to steam ourselves apart over a tea kettle.
So that's how you got stuck on there, huh?
Stuck on. You know what I like about you, Bergen?
No, what?
Nothing.
Oh. But I'm still curious, Professor. What kind of wedding did you and your wife have? Were there a lot of guests throwing rice?
No, just her father throwing lead.
Oh, I see. Well, that's awful. Why did you stand for it?
I had to, boy. Where he got me, I couldn't sit down for a while.
Well, you do carry quite a target.
No, I need a drink.
Yeah.
How about it, boy? Could you loan me a dollar for a little liquid refreshment after the show?
A dollar? Well, all right. Here you are.
Hey, tell me, boy, how long has it been since you spent a buck?
Well, why?
Well, just look at that picture of George Washington.
Well, every dollar bill has a picture of George Washington on it.
Not naked on a bearskin rug.
No. Please, Professor, I think we better get back to our literary work. Have you written any poetic masterpieces lately?
Oh, yes, boy. I dashed off several new romantic sonnets. Let's see, there was, Dungaree Doll, Dungaree Doll, in those pants you look just like Saul. Madrigal entitled, I know lots of girls, many a cute trick, but remember, it's the Iceman who really has his pick.
Yes. I still say, proceed, Professor. The natives are getting restless. Right now, I think it's time for you to read your selection of the evening.
I hope
you have one.
I have one.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I call this little epic Ode to a Perfect Wife.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my wife never fusses, nor grumbles, nor frets. She doesn't thrill highballs or smoke cigarettes. She don't care a hoot about fashion or style. And the greater her trouble, the broader her smile. She never goes out. If she wishes to dance, she just rumbles around with a broom in her hands. And she gets my three meals ready right on the dot. In the kitchen that's spotless, each kettle and pot. Every morning, she brings me my French, freshly pressed. Then she cooks a hot breakfast while I'm getting dressed. And she makes her own clothes. And remodeled old hats and keeps my shoes polished and dry cleans my fats. And there's never a word of rebuke or a frown when I phone her to say I'll be detained in town. She never wakes up and asks where I've been, no matter what time I come staggering in. If I wake with a taste like a rubber eraser, she gives me a hug and a kiss and a bracer and tells me it's one of her life's greatest joys. Just to know that I've had a good time with the boys. Oh, there's doggone few wives quite as perfect as she. And still fewer husbands such liars as me.
Now Gary Crosby enters the vocal spotlight, ably assisted by Carol Richards, singing the Rock and Roll Waltz.
One night I was late, came home from a date, slipped out of my shoes at the door. But then from the front room, I heard a jump too. I looked in, and here's what I saw. There in the night was a wonderful scene. Mom was dancing with Dad. to my record machine. And while they danced, only one thing was wrong. They were trying to walk to a rock and roll song. One, two, and then rock. One, two, and then roll. They did the rock and roll ball. The rock, two, three, roll, two, three.
Hello there, stranger.
How are you tonight, Mortimer?
Well, I'm not so good, Mr. Burgett.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, I got a misery.
I see. It's too bad.
Yes, yes, yeah.
What kind of misery?
Oh, miserable kind of misery.
Have you lost weight?
What'd you say?
I say, have you lost weight?
Why, did you find some?
No. No, what I'm trying to do is get to the seat of your trouble.
Well, that's where my misery is. Oh, that's it.
Yeah. How did it happen?
Well, don't make me tell in front of me. Be here now, people.
Oh, that's all right.
No, I get embarrassed.
You tell us what happened.
Well, I was, Oh, hush up out there. Giggling, tittering out there. Yeah.
You go right in and tell us.
Yeah. I was walking through the woods, you see.
Yeah. You were communing with Mother Nature. Hmm? You were communing with Mother Nature.
No, I wasn't commuting with nobody, no. It was an animal that I captured that caused my trouble.
Oh, an animal?
Yeah. Yep, that's the way it goes, Jim.
What kind of an animal?
What was that?
I said, what kind of an animal?
You just said that.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
It was a furry, furry little thing, and it was built a little like a dart game.
A dart game?
Yeah, a sort of a walking pincushion.
Sounds like a porcupine.
Yeah.
Did you capture him?
Yeah, well, you see, in a way, yeah. Where was I?
How did you capture him?
Oh, yeah. I got tired of walking out there in the woods, see?
Yeah.
So I sat down, and there I had him.
Oh, you had him.
I had him by the seat of my pants.
Oh, you sat down on a porcupine.
Yeah. Painful thought.
Yes, I bet it was.
I never felt so stuck up in my life, no.
I can imagine that. A porcupine has about 30,000 quills, they say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he wasn't selfish with them, nice.
You share them all with me.
Yeah.
You see, the quill is a protective device.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Most animals have such protection, you know. The wolves have fangs, and the bears have claws, and bulls have horns, and what do cats have?
Well, kittens, mostly.
No, no.
Well, they do. Tomcats, yeah, yeah.
Another example of the protective device is the electric eel.
Yeah?
Yeah. It shocks its enemies down at the bottom of the ocean.
It does? Yeah. It must have an awful long extension cord.
Now, the giant squid, you know, throws out ink so that his enemies can't see.
Mm-hmm. They ought to get smart and carry a blotter.
Well, It has a seemingly unlimited supply of ink.
Well, you mean he can write underwater like them, balled-up pens?
Yeah. The squid is a member of the octopus family. You know what octopus is, don't you?
Oh, sure, sure. What?
Well, octopus, you know, well, octo. Octo means eight.
Oh, it does?
Yes, yes.
Oh, now I get it. Octopussy.
That's right.
Eight-legged cat.
No, no.
Hey, nice to have an education.
Yeah. Perhaps I'd better find another example. At the head of the list of nature's protective devices, we find the skunk.
Yeah. If the wind is right, you can't miss it now. Funny thing, I remember once I was working out on the farm, you know, and I caught one of them skunks. He was trying to steal my lunch, you know, see?
Yeah.
It was just 11:30. He shouldn't have been in there at all.
Yeah. I see. Trying to steal your lunch?
Yeah.
Well, I certainly hope that you let him have it.
Well, I was going to, but he let me have it first. Oh,
were you surprised?
I was smellbound.
I'll bet you were.
He must have just come down a long hill. His brakes was burning.
Well, the skunk or polecat is a member of the weasel family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when something frightens it, you know what happens?
Yeah. Pop goes the weasel, huh?
And now, heading up our vocal harmony department, we present the Mellow Men and...
If This Isn't Love.
A secret kind of secret. I make it for to shout it to every daffodil and tell the world about it. In fact, I think I will. If this isn't love, the whole world is crazy. If this isn't love, I'm daft as a daisy. With moons all around and cows jumping over.
Keep your hand if this isn't love. There's and I'll eat my hat if this isn't love.
The Edgar Bergen Hour, transcribed with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, and Ray Noble will be back after station identification. Gary Crosby, Carol Richards, Jack Kirkwood, the Mellow Man, Ray Noble, and yours truly, John Easton. Ladies and gentlemen, with our younger generation showing more and more interest in science fiction and the mysteries of outer space, Charlie McCarthy follows the trend as he brings you his version of the currently popular children's show, The Interplanetary Westerns. Charlie McCarthy Future Productions presents The Adventures of Captain Trace Grace Space Ace.
This program is brought to you by Atomic Flakes, the cereal that forms a mushroom cloud over your breakfast table.
Atomic Flakes is the only breakfast cereal that contains that magic new pick-you-up, uranium.
Fly off to school when Atomic Flakes can blow you there.
You're going to buy them today at your Geiger counter. Atomic Flakes, Geiger counter. Oh, I'm not well.
Oh, and now, Kitty, stand by for today's secret code message. That means happy birthday, Mother.
As today's episode opens, Captain Trace Grace Space Ace and his space cadets are in their rocket ship N-28, circling the moon, looking for a parking space. Oh, Captain Trace Grace Space Ace.
Yeah, what is it, Lieutenant Bob Robb, supersonic slob?
I've just discovered that Space Cadet X-7834 is a woman. How could she have fooled us all this time?
I don't know. I thought those curves in her spacesuit were air pressure.
Hello, Captain. Here I am.
Oh. So you're the stowaway, huh? You disguise yourself as a man to make the trip to the moon with us. Why? Pourquoi?
I'm interested in science, and I heard there's no life on the moon.
Well, there will be now. It's the space radio. Come in.
English rocket ship N-78 calling.
Yep.
We've just captured 3 flying saucers.
Oh, yes?
Tea, anyone? Who ran out? Mabel.
Mabel?
Oh, yes. We have a stowaway aboard our ship, too.
Look, we're approaching the surface of the moon.
Well, give me the controls. I'll take her in for a landing. I'll sort of grease her in. Now watch. Easy does it. And here we go. Oh. crosswind.
What a landing. That was a disgrace, Captain Trace Gray Space Ace.
Yeah, shut up.
Look, Captain, there's someone coming towards us.
Yeah.
It's an inhabitant of the moon. What a monster. I'm going to open his oxygen mask. At last, we see what the moon people look like. Speak to us, old creature from another world. Speak to us.
So, well, that's the way it goes.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's one definition you won't find in any dictionary. Happiness is a thing called Joe. It's sung by Carol Richards. Department. Tonight's guest has a fascinating and unusual hobby. He is a conchologist or seashell collector and a curator of the Aldrich Museum in Balboa, California. I'd like you to meet Dr. Ernest Trapner.
Thank you and good evening.
Well, Dr. Trapner, we're very happy to have you with us this evening. There probably aren't many conchologists in the world, are there?
Perhaps not more than 35,000 really serious ones who belong to any of the international or local shell societies.
Mm-hmm.
But there must be several millions of people who at one time or another have had at least a passing interest in shell collecting.
Well, yes, now that you mention it, I do see lots of couples on the beach on summer nights. However, there could be other interests, I guess, besides shells. When we speak of shells, isn't it a fact, Dr. Trapper, that we're referring to what might be called discarded or cast-off houses of, at one time inhabited by little animals known as mollusks?
Yes, Edgar, and I believe that one of the reasons we're fascinated by shell collecting is because we realize we're close to what was once part of a living organism. By the way, molluscan life goes very far back. It predates man's appearance on Earth by many millions of years. And, of course, molluscan life is found everywhere, from the deepest parts of the sea to the highest mountain peaks.
Well, shells have been important throughout history, haven't they?
Yes, in religious worship. They've been used as money. They've been used in the manufacture of dyes and referred to in literature.
I recall from my history book that our American colonists used shells in trading with the Indians, didn't they?
Right you are. Indians call their shell money wampum. In certain remote parts of Africa, India, and the South Sea Islands, shells are still being used for money.
Maybe that's where my wife picked up the idea. She's always asking me to shell out, you know. Did you think dyes came from shells?
Well, about 2,000 years ago, the people in Tyre, in ancient Phoenicia, obtained a fluid from certain mollusks. From their zealously guarded secret, these Phoenicians were able to dye cloth a very beautiful purple color. It was so expensive that only royalty could afford it. Hence, royal purple.
Probably the original shell game. But since then, shells have been used in many ingenious ways, haven't they?
Indeed, yes. Have you ever noticed the very large shells on which salads are sometimes served in restaurants?
Yes, very beautiful ones, too.
The true they are, in that form. But those lovely shells, called Tridacna gigas, once housed man-eating clams. Now, I've seen these man-eating clams, sometimes as large as an office desk. Some of them weighing 100 pounds, 200 pounds, as high as 500 pounds.
Say, I've heard of those fellows. You know, what can you do if a mad-eating clam grabs you? I guess besides holler, that isn't much.
If one grabs you, Edgar, it's too late already.
I see.
Divers in the Philippine Islands and in the South Sea waters who hope to keep on living have to be very cautious. And when one of those powerful clams grabs you, brother, you've had it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, those clams are called Tridacna gigas.
Well, I never called them that. Hey, what about the poisonous shells I've heard about around the Philippines?
Some species of conus, I think that you're referring to, they're very poisonous. And if you're foolish enough to pick up one in your hand and the animal inside is alive, you probably won't be around very long, for its poisonous bite can be fatal.
I see. How do you classify the various mollusks?
Well, their scientific names are in Latin, Edgar, but their popular names usually describe what they look like. For instance, there's a shell called the sundial, and one called the turkey wing, the worm, the driller, and so forth.
That reminds me of my dentist. I've been seeing too much of him lately.
Oh, the driller. Well, we have an interesting shell called the bleeding tooth.
Yeah, he probably got too near the driller then. But it certainly is very interesting. Tell me, Dr. Trapner, what kind of social life do these mullets have? I imagine they probably hold hands now and then, get a little romantic, don't they?
Well, I'm afraid not, Edgar. You see, mullets are a very much lower form of animal life than we usually see
There are some that some mollusks that don't differentiate between male and female as we know the sexes.
You mean they don't know which is the male and which is female?
Some don't, that's right.
Oh, these are not happy shells. Is there much similarity at all between mollusks and animals?
Well, in some ways, they are amazing alike. For instance, there are among these little shell animals, and we call these little creatures that inhabit the shells animals. They're the fighters, the drillers, the carriers, and I should say sad ones and happy ones.
Well, they're probably the ones that found out what they are. How can you tell when you see a shell that is happy? That would be nice to know.
Well, I should imagine if you saw some shells playing leapfrog, jumping over each other's backs, you're probably seeing happy shells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, if I ever see that, I think I'll take myself to a psychiatrist. Dr. Trotner, what makes shell valuable? It must be more than the beauty in the shell alone.
Well, beauty has something to do with it, not too much, however. Scarcity of the shell is the important item. So is the number of fathoms deep the diver has to go for it. Perhaps the most expensive shell in the world is the Glory of the Sea. It's very rare and valued at about $2,000.
And what about the collection at the Aldrich Museum? What is its value?
Well, Edgar, we value our shell collection down in Balboa at the Aldrich Museum to be around $250,000. It's the largest shell display museum in the world. So if you get down to Balboa Pavilion in Balboa, come in and see us. We have specimens of man-eating clams and poisonous conus mollusks, but don't be afraid because none of them are alive.
Well, thank you, Dr. Trotner, and I'll be down to see you someday. And thank you for being with us this evening and telling us about your very interesting hobby. Good night, Doctor.
Good night.
Now we return to the musical portion of the show as Gary Crosby sings The Great Pretender.
Oh, yes, I'm a great pretender. Pretending I'm doing so well. My need is such, I pretend too much I'm lonely, but no one can tell. Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender, adrift in a world of my own. I play the game, but to my real shame, you have left me to dream all alone.
long last, there's a smoother taste in smoking. It's the Viceroy taste.
Smoother, 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 Viceroy. Smoother taste on Viceroy has twice as many filters as the other two leading filters to your end.
Yes, Viceroy is the cigarette so smooth, it's changed the smoking habits of the nation. It's changed millions to the good, smooth taste that only Viceroy's 20,000 filters can deliver. The truth is, only Viceroy gives you 20,000 filters in every tip, made from pure cellulose. Soft, snow-white, natural. That's twice as many filters as the other two largest selling filter brands. That's why the Viceroy taste is never rough. Never, no, never rough. It's smoother by far.
A smoother taste on Viceroy has twice as many filters as the other two leading filter cigarettes.
Smoke smoother, Viceroy.
Oh, college day, oh, knowledge day, when midnight oil was burning in those ivied halls of learning, and Plato in his grave was turning in
Now for the cultural portion of our program. Tonight, our panel of mental giants turn their fabulous intellect towards the legitimate theater as they discuss the topic, Whither the Drama. Ladies and gentlemen, Edgar Bergen and his End Table.
Thank you and good evening, noble and esteemed gentlemen of the panel.
Yes.
Gentlemen, tonight's topic, Whither the Drama, is one that is near and dear to my heart. Ah, oh, the thrill of opening night. The lure of the footlights. Oh, the smell of the grease paint.
Call the farmer's market. One of their hams got away.
Please, panel.
What, sir?
Yeah. I think we should start our discussion by analyzing the new trends in modern drama.
Okay.
Professor Snur?
But, me, sir.
Yes, I do. Have you had any experience on the stage?
Well, yes, sir. Oh, me and another fellow once acted in a horse opera.
Horse opera?
Yeah, horse opera, yeah. We play the horse.
Oh, you play the horse. Which part of the horse did you play?
Good question. I played the part that didn't smile much.
Part of her. You mean?
Yeah, that's the way it goes, I see. I was the rudder.
Yeah. I say, speaking of horses, I once played the part of Paul Revere on the stage.
Oh?
Yes, yes. I wish you could have seen it when I shouted, "The British are coming."
Yes. Good job.
Oh, yes.
Was it convincing?
Oh, it must have been, old boy, yes. Most of the audience got up and left.
Yeah. Oh, that was funny.
Yeah. You liked it?
Yeah. I was the rudder, yeah.
Well,
I had a slow horse.
We're discussing Whither the Drama.
Well, go ahead and ask me something.
Yeah.
I know good acting.
Okay.
In fact, I discovered Rita Hayworth 10 years ago before she was a star.
What was Hayworth then?
Oh, about what it is now, $20 a ton.
No.
Joke in Bonneville, boy.
Yeah?
Laugh? I thought they'd never start.
I say, were you really in Bonneville?
That's right, boy.
Uh-huh.
You see, I've got a very big theatrical background.
Yes, I see. How did you ever get it into the theater?
Oh, well, back to Slenderella.
Way back.
Our subject, and we do have one, gentlemen.
Oh, yes.
Whither the Drama. Now, as you all know, the earliest plays were done in old Greece.
I think that's rather messy.
One could slip out of character.
What plays did they do? The Crisco Kids?
Yes.
No.
Come.
Where are we going, Tom?
Back to the subject.
Oh, yes.
May I lead you? I was talking about the Greeks. You know, they were responsible for some of our earliest dramas, such as Agamemnon.
Good.
Yes, and Eumenides.
Yes.
And Antigone.
Sure.
And Oedipus Colonius. And Hippolytus. And... And then,
could you unscrew that and give it to us in sections?
Oh, yeah.
Gentlemen, I'm trying to make a point. Now, dramatic writing developed through the years,
you know,
until it reached its peak in the Elizabethan era. That's when Shakespeare became immortal, of course.
Why, the old rascal?
No, immortal, Ray. Yeah.
I think it was the first time.
I feel I can discuss the subject because I acted in some of Shakespeare's plays. In fact, once I was Hamlet, the Great Dane.
Great Dane?
Yes, yes.
You look more like a Mexican hairless.
Do you think he bites?
Well, who can ever forget Hamlet?
There you go. Well, I don't know. Give us a chance, will you?
To be or not to be? That is the question.
Well, what's the answer? I said I could act in that there play. That play, Piglet?
No, Hamlet.
Hamlet, yeah.
Very difficult part, Mortimer.
It is?
Yes. Let's see if you can register woe.
No. Whoa there. Whoa, boy. Whoa.
He's back inside the horse again.
I'm the runner.
Let's forget the whole thing.
I say, you know, I know some Shakespeare myself.
Good.
Oh, yes. Listen. The quality of mercy is not strange.
Oh, stop. That's enough. That's terrible.
I beg your pardon. My dear boy, during my career, I've risen to great heights on the stage.
What did you do? Back into a spear?
Did that hurt your rudder?
Yeah, you don't need a fan.
No.
Modern times has turned to a new form of expression, you know, the musical drama such as Carousel, Oklahoma, and, of course, Fanny.
Oh, please, Mr. Bergen.
Yeah. The least you can do is to say rudder.
Yeah, rudder.
You know, I just had to leave the new hit Broadway play. I'll never forget my big speech.
Yeah.
Meow! Meow! Meow!
But what play was that?
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Oh.
I said it, and I'm glad.
There's very little to make you happy.
Now, wait a minute, Kirkwood. You've never been in a Broadway show. I smell a rat.
Well, that's all right. He probably smells you, too.
No. We must get back to our discussion. To become a good actor, you really have to go to a dramatic school.
I do?
Yes, you do. That's right. You have to study hard. What do you think got Marilyn Monroe all those wonderful parts?
All those wonderful parts.
Yeah. Well.
Now, Mortimer, a good idea might be for you to do some summer stock. You know, make your barn into a theater.
I say, a theater? Into a barn?
Well, why not? We already got a ticket booth there.
You have?
Yeah. All we have to move that little house from embarrassment.
No.
Huh? Oh, I mean the chicken coop, yeah. Oh,
Please, that's right. I cannot condone this inexpedient display of virility, mediocrity and eccentricity, imbecility and absurdity and superficiality of literacy and capacity.
Good night.
You know, buying a new TV set can be a pretty bewildering experience. Lined up side by side, the new sets look so much alike that you're tempted to play eeny, meeny, miny, bo. But don't do it, friends, because inside the cabinet there is a big difference between the new CBS TV sets and all the others.
Right, John?
A big difference, Edgar, because only the new CBS television sets give you all nine of TV's most wanted advances. Not trifling style changes, but big, important engineering improvements like CBS robot tuning. One touch of a button, and it changes stations automatically. Then there's CBS remote control that enables you to tune your set from your chair anywhere in the room. And here's a big hidden feature, the CBS Imperial Chassis, the mighty power plant that gives CBS TV sets up to 25 times more sensitivity than sets made as recently as 2 years ago. Those are just a few of the nine most wanted advances found only in the new CBS TV sets. So don't trust to luck when you buy a new TV set, folks. Make your set a better set. Make it a CBS.
Ladies and gentlemen, be sure and tune in to our show next week for the debut of our new vocal sensation, Igor Bergen. The only singer I've ever heard who can change keys in the middle of a note. Yes. I have warned you.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Now, here's Edgar Bergen.
It's time for another bit of sage advice from our rural philosopher, Mortimer. And here he is with Nerd Words for the Birds.
The best walking is done on foot. Thank you. I just don't care. No.
Thanks, Mortimer. And until next Sunday, good night, everyone.
Remember to listen to Andrew Bergen, Johnny McCarthy, Mortimer Sterr, Ray Noble, and the entire ensemble next Monday at the same time. Tonight's Andrew Bergen Show with Jack Kirkwood, Carol Richards, Gary Crosby, Frank Nelson, and the Mellow Man was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Sam Sears. Stripped by Fire Rose, Gino Flinker, and Hilda Black. This is John Easton speaking.